change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai with another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. Today, my guest is Eric Clay. Eric is the CEO of Vail Creative. Eric, how are you?
Doing well. How are you today, Mickey?
I'm good, thanks. We're going to talk about digital marketing today.
Yes, absolutely. So just to give a little bit of background on me and my company is we focus on content marketing and digital marketing for kind of a range of companies and nonprofits, from technology and cybersecurity to also we work with a big nonprofit psychology group. So we really do kind of run the gambit. And so I'd love to help provide some value to your listeners in terms of content marketing and see if we can't go from there.
Excellent. Yeah, let's see what we can do. You as I ask all my guests to do, you sent a nice list of topics and bullet points. I like the first one you sent, which is goal-oriented marketing and working backwards. What does that mean for a nonprofit organization?
Absolutely. So one of the things I see a lot, and this is actually across both companies and nonprofit, you know, for-profit companies and nonprofits, is a lot of companies, you know, they know they need to be blogging, they know they need to have email campaigns, but they don't really know how to do it and they don't really have a strategy behind it. And that's not really their fault. It's kind of one of those things where marketing gets put on the back burner for a lot of nonprofits and companies because it's, you know, in a way, it, ironically enough, it can be kind of hard to tie revenue to compared to something like sales or, you know. So yeah, what I always tell people is like when they're building a marketing program, they really need to think through it. And they need to develop a strategy. And the best way to do that is come up first with the goals. What are you trying to achieve? Are you trying to get donations? Are you trying to sign up volunteers? You know, there's a million different things. Are you trying to build publicity for your nonprofit? And then once you've identified the goals, you know, I want to get $7,500 a month in donations per, you know, by quarter two of 2021, then you want to work backwards. How do you do that? And that you know, that's what I really try to help companies with is going from, you know, we're going to, you know, their goal might be we're going to write six blog posts a month to, no, we want our goal to be what is the actual outcome we're trying to achieve? And then what is the strategy we need in place to do that? You know, getting to $7,500 in donations a month might be, you know, you might write two blog posts, but they're really high value and they're really targeted.
Yeah.
And that can work a lot better than just spamming out like 10 or 15 blog posts. So what I mean by goal-oriented marketing and working backwards is we always set our goals, then we put the strategy in place, and then we put the tactics in place. And then you can actually measure something going forward and keep refining your approach to do better and better, ideally.
Okay. See, the part I'm stuck on is the working backwards part. I mean, because in a sense, it sounds like you're describing the typical thing that I advise clients to do, which is to set your goals and then devise a strategy to meet them. Is that not what you're saying?
That is effectively what I'm saying. Yes. What I mean by working backwards is you're taking the goals and then you're working backwards from there. When a lot of people are like, you know, we need to write some blog posts and we need to do an email campaign, but they're building it in the wrong order.
Right. Right. So in other words, have your mechanisms tailored to the actual end result and instead of the other way around.
Exactly.
Right. Don't just do a blog for the sake of having a blog. In other words,
a surprising number of people do that. And I understand why they do that. I actually used to do that myself when I'm there in one of my first roles.
Yeah.
But it's so much more effective when you come up with the strategy first.
Right. I mean, in the past, I've sort of advised people to try to have some sort of regularity with the way they do post, because my understanding is that the Google algorithm, for instance, will pop you up if you have fresh content showing up on your blog with some regularity and some frequency. Does that not still apply?
That does apply, but with a caveat. What a lot of companies do, and is, you know, they've been told that, you know, you need to get six blog posts a month, and they'll write like 400 to 500 word blog posts that aren't really targeted towards a keyword. And they might promote those on their social media and they might drive a few dozen people, but like the return on investment really isn't good. And if you aren't really like targeting keywords with your blog posts and really focused on the SEO portion of things, you know, even you could write 100 fresh blog posts, but it really won't get you very far. Because even, you know, and you'll rank for some keywords. Don't get me wrong. Like, you will rank for some keywords, but are they the keywords you want to rank for? Or are they the keywords that will drive people to your website that actually might take the action that you've identified during your goal setting?
Right. Right. So it is the actual keywords and the SEO strategy that makes the difference.
Yes, exactly. Right. You know, I work with a lot of different companies, and some of them, you know, there's two parts to SEO. There's a backlink profile, which is basically how many people are linking to your website. And that's really critical, right? If you have nobody else in the world is linking to your website, you're not going to rank for anything. So that's kind of part one. But yeah. I work with a lot of organizations that actually have really strong backlink profiles and have done a lot of blogging, but they've never married the two, where they've got the backlink profile to rank for really good keywords that could drive really high intent traffic to their website, but they just have never actually done like the keyword research and the intent and, you know, figured out how to do it in a way that drives those people to their website. And honestly, the backlink part is the hardest part. So if you've got a great backlink profile and you're not driving all that organic traffic, you're missing out on a lot of value.
Interesting.
So going back to your point though, that you made, so yes, you want fresh content, you want regular fresh content if SEO is a piece of your strategy. But what you also need to make sure is that content isn't a 400-word blog post that's going to be forgotten in 2 or 3 days. It's something that really provides a lot of value to the readers. It's well-structured. It has, we can talk about like how to actually structure things to help rank them in a little bit. But, it's well-structured. Maybe it has an infographic or a video. Like, it's something that people would actually find value in reading and sharing. And I think a lot of people miss that step. When they're writing, because they're like, I got to get this blog post out this week. We have our goal to hit 4 blog posts this month and we're running behind.
Right. Right. So maybe less is better.
Sometimes. Yes. I think one high value blog post that's, I don't like to go off word count because you can write a really bad 2000 word blog, but one 2000 word blog that really provides a lot of value to the readers, regardless of what, industry or sector, or what you're trying to get them to achieve.
Right.
Is way better than 2,400 word blog posts. Okay. And I know marketing agencies that write 400 word blog posts. So it's all about providing value. And, when I am writing blog posts for customers or when I'm reading blog posts, I'm always thinking like, how can I optimize this to provide value in every sentence? Mm-hmm. Or at least a couple times in every paragraph, if nothing else. Because that's really, really critical.
Yeah.
Because, something like 96% of blog posts never get a backlink. And that's pretty bad, right? If you're 96% of people are writing posts that nobody thinks are worth linking back to from any other website. Uh-huh. And so when I'm doing content for customers and when I'm advising customers, I always tell them, it's better to take 30 or 50 or 100 hours and write something really great than it is to take 30 or 50 or 100 hours and write 30 things that are kind of mediocre.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So we've kind of touched on this already. How do you identify what actions you want your prospects to take? And I mean, we've sort of touched on this already, but if the point is to be intentional with the whole menu of digital media marketing that's in front of us, how does a nonprofit discern what it is they need to do?
Absolutely. So I'll use, a lot of nonprofits probably want donations. That would be pretty common. So that would be a big one right off the bat.
Yep.
But in addition to that, you might have, for instance, I'm working with a psychology group and they're actually releasing some courses on early childhood psychology. And so for them, like getting course signups is the goal they want to take. So it's really going to be very niche specific. I would suspect a lot are going to fall into like volunteers, purchases, or donations. But I'm sure in the nonprofit world, there could be a million different goals. And some of, it might just be promoting yourselves, right? You might not necessarily want 10 volunteers. Maybe you don't have any use for 10 volunteers or you're in a really specialty field or something like that. So maybe you're just trying to promote your brand and get your brand out there. And that can be a goal too. And, if you're trying to promote your brand, you might have a different set of keywords that you pick to focus on than if you're trying specifically to drive donations or drive volunteering or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Matt, what is a marketing funnel? Is it different than a sales funnel?
Essentially, I like to think of a marketing funnel as the front end. It's how do you get the impressions that could lead to people becoming prospects, right? So A sales funnel typically starts at a prospect, somebody who's interested in purchasing, and goes all the way through a close where they close one or the close lost.
Yeah.
A marketing funnel is about building that initial part where you get the prospects, right? The people, how do you promote your brand and bring people in who can see your brand and get to know your brand, whether you're a nonprofit or a company. And then from there, like give their email address or give their name, email address, and phone number, et cetera. So, I personally never been a fan of cold sales, It's always like, how do you interact with people in a way that provides value to them and enough value that they're interested in interacting with you too? And so part of that is just promoting yourself enough that people find you. And then it's providing value once people find you to get them to give you their email address or their phone number or their contact information. So then you can kind of continue to build the relationship with them.
Yeah. A real call to action to be in touch.
Yes, exactly. And there's a, part of it is the SEO part where you're bringing them and hopefully you're bringing high intent traffic with kind of a targeted keyword approach.
Yep.
And then once they're on the site and they're reading the content, they're like, wow, you always want to wow your customers. Wow, this is really good. This is providing a lot of value to me. And then you can always offer them extra value. You know, if you give us your email address and we'll send you your free guide to X, Y, and Z, something right. like that. Right. And that can provide additional value. They get, you know, you get their email, and then you can help provide value through all of the emails to them. And over time, you build that relationship up. People get to know your brand, and you can get donations. You can get volunteers. You can get a lot of things out of it. People will share your content. So it can be a slow buildup at first, but it's really worth it in the end.
Yeah. Is it expensive to do? Is it expensive to develop a marketing funnel?
Only if you make it expensive. So there's a lot of different ways that you can do it, right? If I was working for a SaaS cybersecurity company, you know, there's going to be digital advertising in there and email campaigns, and there's a lot. But a lot of nonprofits are on a limited marketing budget, right? Everybody's on a limited budget. But if your focus isn't purely on profit, you're on an even more limited budget. So one of the great things about building an SEO and content marketing strategy is you can do it for nearly free with the existing resources you have. And in a lot of cases, using your existing resources is better than going out and hiring people. And what I mean by that is when people are writing blog posts, one of the big mistakes people make, and I say this as an outsourced blog writing firm, is they go and they hire people to do the work that they would be better served having subject matter experts do themselves. And so when I say that, what I mean is this. If I'm a psychology nonprofit and I'm trying to help people with dealing with autism, right? Yeah. It would be better if I have my in-house psychologist write that article than if I go pay a company to write that article for me that doesn't know that much about psychology.
Yeah.
So you always want to focus, you know, you always want to use your in-house resources where you can, who are subject matter experts. It's the same with cybersecurity, right? I'm probably not going to write a very high or publish a very high value article if I go pay somebody who knows nothing about cybersecurity to write a 1200 word article on cybersecurity versus have my in-house cybersecurity folks do it. So I think that's a really, really critical piece. Is it's actually SEO and content marketing is going to be done better if you have your experts do it than if you go out and hire people who don't really know the field to do it, because it's all about providing value.
Right. And it probably happens more organically if you get it to happen in-house. I mean, these are people who are already using the terms that you want to be using for SEO.
Yeah, generally speaking, that's correct. You know, there's certainly an art to SEO, but I think that a lot of organizations could get, you know, the basics of SEO down. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect, right? You're probably not running a $50 million SEO campaign. You can get the basics of SEO down and publish that high value content and have your folks in-house write it. Do a few optimizations before you publish it that'll take a day or two to learn. And you're going to be doing so much better than if you're, you know, either trying to outsource and not getting a whole lot of results, or if you're writing a lot of articles, but they're not seeming to get a lot of traction. So I think it's a combination of doing a really targeted approach, providing value, and then having real experts who know the field do it.
Right. Let's switch gears a little bit in the few minutes that we have left. You've said that you should use your website from the perspective of a customer. And I've seen many nonprofits put up, you know, brochureware or a website that really doesn't think about the customer. How do you suggest a nonprofit, you know, get that external perspective and make their websites really useful to their customer / donor / you know, program participant?
So this is, it all goes back to providing value.
Yeah.
This again, so if you're a customer going to a website, a lot of companies and nonprofits will make their websites about them, about themselves, right? Like, we're offering this, we're doing this, we're excited to announce this. And really what you want to do is you want to flip that around. And you want to say, what does the customer want? What if I'm, you know, depending on what action you want, let's say you want volunteers, right? What would a potential volunteer want to see on this website to make them, you know, take that extra step and sign up? You know, is it more about like the value proposition of that the nonprofit is the nonprofit? You know, if a nonprofit is working in the education sector, for instance, you know, maybe it would be worth saying, you know, our volunteers work in X, Y, and Z, and they get this experience, and providing more value to the person that you're trying to get to take the action versus making the website about themselves. So I always like to, when I'm working on any kind of website, I always think, what is the customer's perspective? The person I want to take the action, whether it's buying or volunteering or donating, what is their perspective, and what is going to appeal to them in order to get them to take the action that I want? So I always tell people, make the website less about what you're doing and more about how it benefits your end customer, which is fairly basic marketing advice, but a lot of people kind of miss that when they're working on stuff.
It's hard though. I mean, it is basic marketing advice, and it certainly seems obvious, but I think it's hard to put yourself in the head of the recipient to figure out what words to use that, you know, opens the door for them. And yeah.
Absolutely. And you can have a little, you know, control group of your, if you run a small nonprofit of your friends and family, or if you run a bigger nonprofit, you can pay a few people who would be in your kind of target demographic to, you know, give them $20 Amazon gift cards and say, like, critique this website for me. What would you change about this website? And it's not always best to have marketing experts. Sometimes it might be better to have people who have already volunteered for you or have already donated, and incentivize them to go in and say, you know, I think you could improve this or this. The other part is a lot of websites don't have call to actions. And that's really, really important. You know, almost every website, there's almost no scenario in which you build a website where you don't want people to take some kind of action.
Right, right.
And I see a lot of people that, you know, they'll have a website, but they don't have a lot of CTAs where, you know, donate now or volunteer now or sign up for our email list.
Yeah.
And you really want a lot of calls to action, because people a lot of time won't even scroll down to the end of the page. So if your call to action is at the very bottom of a blog post or at the very bottom of your homepage, like 70% of people who visit your website might never see it.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of like making calls to action like visible, and then making sure that people feel like they're getting value in return, right? Nobody's ever going to just give you their email address because they want you to spam their inbox, right? So you need to provide some kind of value in exchange for that call to action.
Right. Right.
But so that's like one thing I'm very big on, is like make calls to action very prominent and put them in a lot of places and then provide value with them. Yeah. You know, I've worked on a lot of conversion rate optimization. And by putting calls to action kind of throughout the site, but not spamming them, but just making them very visible and making them very prominent, making them provide value, can, you know, increase your conversion rate from maybe 5 a month to 50 a month. I mean, it can really be that big of a difference.
Wow. Kind of dramatic.
Yes. We found we were working on a cybersecurity landing page at one point, and we increased our conversion rate by 400% by moving the button from the bottom of the page to the top of the page.
That's insane.
Something that simple can make that big of a difference.
Oh my goodness. So of course, here I'm sitting here critiquing my own websites now. I'm like, man, I'm really not following the best practices on my own website. I've got some work to do.
I'll be honest, on my first website for my company, I didn't either. I was like, I'm just going to throw this together and get something. You know, I had my first like two customers and I was like, I don't care about my website. But,
right.
But you know, as you mature and stuff, it can be really worthwhile to even make those like basic changes. It can make a really, really big difference, especially if you already have a lot of organic traffic, right?
Right.
So if you've spent some time blogging and stuff, chances are you have at least some people, maybe 1,000, maybe 5,000, maybe 10,000, depends on how big you are. But chances are you do have some people visiting your website, and making those changes can make a huge difference. Whether you want them to sign up to blog for, you know, sign up to get blog notifications, which are valuable, right? Because you're building your email list, or whether you're getting them to wanting people to volunteer for you. There's a lot of different things you can ask people, but make sure you're actually asking them to do it.
Right. Right. Exactly. I wanted to go back to the notion of doing focus groups. I've been a part of some of those processes. It's amazing how many nonprofits don't bring their actual stakeholders and program participants into the room for those discussions. You can't just do a focus group with your board and your staff. That is completely inadequate. But yeah, you know, bring in the people who you're talking to, bring in your volunteers, bring in your donors, and ask them as well. I think that's critical.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, at one of the companies that I worked full time for before, what we did is we brought in our top five customers, and we kind of tried to pick like a range, you know, not our top five necessarily, but we brought in five customers and we tried to make them a little bit diverse in terms of like their geography and where they're from. But they all, of course, had the single interest of using our product. Right. And we had a meeting with them every month, and we talked about what we could do better, what features they wanted, how they interacted with the website, what they liked about the marketing, what they didn't like about the marketing. And I'll tell you, it was really enlightening, because when you're in an organization, there's always some groupthink going on, right? Like people tend to form opinions, and then everybody ends up sharing those opinions, or most everybody. So having people in that have diverse backgrounds that are your customers and aren't in your organization, and you're talking to them regularly about what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, what they think you should be doing better, it first of all can give you a lot of ideas that you wouldn't have had before and that you might not have considered. Secondly, it can really help you see your organization from an outside perspective. And thirdly, it can actually help you build the relationships with those folks that you bring in too. So it's a win on all accounts, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're rapidly running out of time. Can we wrap the episode by talking about some quick tips on how to structure content for SEO?
Yes, absolutely. So the first thing is you want to find keywords. Now, you're probably operating on a limited budget. You don't want to spend $500 a month on keyword tools. So one really easy way you can do it is you can make a free Google Ads account, and they have a tool in there called Keyword Planner. Oh. And you can actually go in and type in keywords that you might want to rank for. So if you're a psychology nonprofit, you might want to, you know, rank for early childhood psychology, just as an example. Right. It'll spit out a list of a bunch of different variants of that keyword, along with the monthly search volume, which is important, right? You don't want to try to rank for a keyword that has five searches a month. You're not going to get very far very fast. And it'll tell you the difficulty of advertising for that keyword, which is probably going to be somewhat correlated with the difficulty of ranking for it. But that one's a little bit murkier, but you can at least get a start there. Sure. So you can use free Google Ads account, Keyword Planner. You want to set up Google Analytics and Google Search Console. It takes about 10 minutes. Most people probably already have that set up, but I do want to mention that if they don't. And then on top of that, the most important thing for SEO in my mind after you have your keyword is you want to do a correct heading structure. And headings are H1, H2, and H3. Yes. A lot of times I see people using them just for aesthetic purposes, like, oh, I want the bigger text here. So, but you actually want to structure what words you have in your H1, H2, and H3 subheadings and use it to break up your articles into a nice readable format, right? Not only to help your prospects read it, but also to help Google read it. Because basically the Google algorithm takes into account headings. It's like the most important thing. So your H1 heading, you should only have one. It should be your page title. You're a little bit better if you put your keyword at the front. So if I'm trying to rank for cybersecurity compliance, a complete guide, it's better if, and I'm trying, my keyword I'm trying to rank for is cybersecurity compliance. It's better to write my H1 title as cybersecurity compliance - a complete guide than it is to write a complete guide to cybersecurity compliance. You actually want your keyword at the beginning of the H1 heading if you can.
Yeah.
Then you want to structure your content with H2 and H3 subheadings. The H2 subheadings should have, in most cases, a related keyword, either your keyword or a related keyword in them. Don't like keyword spam, like make it human readable, but that's potentially telling Google what your article's about.
Yes.
The more comprehensive you make it, the better. Google ranks content for comprehensiveness. A 1,200 word blog post is much more likely to rank than a 400 word blog post.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Another thing, you always search the topic you're trying to rank for and read what other people have written about it and try to do twice as good as them. That's what I tell my clients, right? Google ranks content based on user experience, and you want your content to be the best. And that is what will end up ranking for Google. So you got your correct structure. The last thing I'll mention that's pretty easy is your URL. So Google actually also ranks content based on the terminology used in the URL. What I mean by that is if you have a website, valecreative.com/blog/the complete guide to marketing for nonprofits, right? That end, that the permalink at the end there, you actually want that to reflect your keyword exactly. So instead of the complete guide to marketing for nonprofits, if I'm trying to rank for the term marketing for nonprofits, that's what I would want my URL to be, is valecreative.com/blog/marketing-for-nonprofits.
Yeah.
So those few easy changes, along with using Google Keyword Planner to actually identify really valuable keywords that have some search traffic. And then if you wanted to get more advanced, you could use Ahrefs or SEMrush. Both of them are like $100 a month to start, so not too expensive. Hmm. And creating really, really valuable content focused around those keywords you identify, using the subheadings and structuring, getting the URL correct, getting pretty lengthy content, getting some backlinks if you can. If you have some other nonprofits you're in contact with or associations, get asking them, hey, can you put a link back to my website? Those things can help make an enormous difference in getting people to your website and then helping get them to take the actions that you want them to.
Wow. Okay. So it sounds like an interesting juggling act overall.
It certainly is.
If a listener wanted to be in contact with you with any questions, how would you suggest they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. They can email me at eric@valecreative.com, or they can visit valecreative.com, which is valecreative.com.
Fantastic. Thank you for making the time to do this episode with me. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mickey. It's been a real pleasure.
And to our listeners, thank you as always for joining us for the Nonprofit Snapcast. We value your comments and feedback via the website. That's nonprofitsnapcast.org. And if you have any questions about the consulting work that we do, please visit nonprofitsnapshot.org. That's nonprofitsnapshot, not to be confused with Nonprofit Snapcast. nonprofitsnapshot.org. Click on the consulting tab at the top of the screen and you'll see the list of things that we're currently doing in partnerships with consultants across the country. In the meantime, thanks again for joining us. We'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.